When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company.
Like super woke.
When I grow up, I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR. Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, redballoon.work.
Hey everybody, Michael Thiessen here, and you are listening to Open Mic with me, Michael Thiessen. This show is produced by Liberty Coalition Canada in partnership with ChristianWeek.org. Liberty Coalition Canada exists to establish Christ's justice and righteousness. We want to teach on how the Bible defines justice and righteousness and defend those who stand. So we have a legal team that supports Canadians who are standing for their Christian beliefs in the public sphere. Christian Week exists to provide a practical, balanced, hope-filled perspective on national and global issues. Head over to ChristianWeek.org and get some great news in print. This show is also a ministry of my local church, Royal Spring Chapel. If you want to support our podcasting work, head over to libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate and click the analysis box. Donations there go directly to ChristianWeek.org. And if you want to support our legal and advocacy work, also head over to the website, but click other designations. And that way you can go to some of our legal cases and support them directly. Want to make you aware, listeners, of our Politics in the Pulpit conferences that we have coming up. We want to help Christians engage in the political and cultural spheres in effective and godly ways. So rather than keeping politics out of the pulpit, meaning that pastors don't teach on these very important worldview issues, Christians must learn to speak boldly and clearly into culture and politics. So you will be able to join us for our Canadian events in Weston, Nova Scotia on April 20th, in Ingersoll, Ontario on May 4th, and in New Westminster, BC on May 25th. So we're going to have a number of vendors there, including the Christian Heritage Party, Action for Canada, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, and the Ezra Institute. So head over to our website, libertycoalitioncanada.com/politics-in-the-pulpit and register today. Seats are limited. We really want you to come and secure your spot for these great events. We have not been talking about these things in the pulpit as we should have, and that's partly why we are at the cultural moment that we are today. So everybody, I'm really pleased to welcome to our show the Honorable Stockwell Day, former leader of the opposition, former minister of public safety, to the show. And Stockwell is one of the Christians in Canada who has been engaged in a political sphere with a Christian worldview. Stockwell, it's absolutely my pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for all of your work in the past and what you're doing right now. Thanks for coming on.
Well, Michael, thank you. Thanks for having me. And thank you for encouraging people to speak up boldly, as you said. But we have to speak into the world situation around us, and I appreciate the work you do to encourage people to do that.
So, Stockwell, you were the Ministry of Public Safety, and I think for many Canadians, they may not even fully understand what that office is all about. But as you're looking at the world, and of course, we're going to be talking about the Israeli-Hamas conflict today. That's going to be the center of our conversation. But as you're looking at the world, is the world getting safer or is the world getting more dangerous?
Great question. And we want to be encouraging. I don't want to scare your viewers.
they're scared all the time.
You know, I'll speak from the context and through the lens of where I served in terms of public safety. Public safety, some of your viewers might be more familiar with the term Homeland Security. But basically, I was responsible for our borders, the federal prison system, corrections, federal police service, being the RCMP, and our intelligence service, and then working with other countries on security-related issues, terrorism, etc. So within that context, I'm going to say that we are in a less safe world than we were certainly when I was Minister of Public Safety, not that I was keeping the world safe, but things are less safe in the world, even since October 7th, because there are so many forces at work globally now that are focused around the issues related to the Middle East. And we are, again, I'm not wanting to scare people, we are in a more, a riskier situation now of seeing things move to an actual, what we might call a third world war. And also we are at higher risk of seeing individual terrorist incidents globally in all countries.
So this next question comes from just the last 3 or 4 years of my experience. We, in what we would probably call the Liberty Movement, those concerned with the draconian lockdowns of COVID, those concerned with like just the ignorance or the intentional ignoring of best practices for patients and things like that, that drew together a lot of people in a liberty movement that now you just mentioned moving into a third world war. If I just am scrolling through Twitter in the last 4 days, here are a number of things that I would have heard. And I'm putting this in the Liberty Movement because there's disagreement. So we've got the U.S. welcoming Ukraine into NATO. And within the Liberty Movement, you're going to see division between people who are saying that is a good move and that is a bad move. You're seeing... The reason why that conversation seems to be important is because it is now being viewed as a parallel situation with Israel, where you've got prominent conservatives asking the question, why would the United States and North America, Canada stand with Israel? And so you've got conflict. And not so much even in the movement where there's like misinformation, like people who have problems with Hamas are still saying, is this a proxy war that's being created? And so something that I've noticed within the Liberty Movement is now this conversation of Israel being viewed in parallel with Ukraine. Someone just brought up making that parallel to Taiwan. There's this question and now disunity within the Liberty Movement. So the question that I have is, number one, it's going to start with a comment. I'm really glad you went to Israel to get on the ground information. And we, our listeners, are going to benefit from that. So we want to make sure that we get there. But I do want to ask the question, from your understanding of the historical development and your previous roles, why would you passionately jump on a plane to go and try to explain to people what's really happening in Israel? And can you try to put that in the greater context of international affairs and try to help people understand, are we now just giving over to a globalist agenda that any of these types of like NATO's compromised and they're no longer acting in our benefit and they're just trying to create a war? Or no, here we do have some good policies in place that are causing a potential need to go to war, but are worthwhile ventures.
You know, that's a great way to approach it because there are good policies in place. Believe it or not, in Canada, regardless of how you vote, we have some good policies. There's some good policies in place globally. So if you want to go to the really big picture, well, I guess the really big picture would, of course, be looking through this in a biblical lens. But I like to approach it, too, to say that that does not contradict somebody looking at the Middle East situation through a completely a-religious or atheistic lens. Matter of fact, the guy who started what we call the modern Zionist movement, which has got so many people upset, Theodor Herzl, late 1800s and 1900s, a Jewish, very strong Jewish, very obviously defender of the Jewish nation and the Jewish people, and a complete atheist. So you don't have to be either atheist or religious necessarily to be worried about the situation. So tracking back to what you're projecting, we should be, people who love democracy and love what we call freedom, should be very concerned about the Middle East, because Israel is, you know, call it another name, Michael. Let's say call it Roseland. You know, the rose bloomed like it is. Let's take all the religious context, all the biblical out, which, by the way, is central to it. But let's take that out for a minute. And now here we are in Canada, and there's this country called Roseland. It's in the Middle East. It's the only democracy. It's the only country in the Middle East that supports freedom of rights, freedom of speech, equal rights for women, equal rights for minorities, transgender, any freedom-oriented item you want. It's the only country in the Middle East supporting that, and all the countries around it want to exterminate it. So would it not be in our interest to do what we can to support that country, and understanding that, like any other country or government, it's got its own problems and fallacies, you know, areas of failing also. So we should be supporting Israel just from a democratic point of view. If we don't, and if we listen carefully to the voices that want to destroy Israel, or if people don't like saying Israel, call it Roseland, we need to listen to the voices of Hamas, for instance, to the voices of Iran, who are saying very clearly, by the way, we're not just out to exterminate Roseland or Israel. Once we've done with Israel, we'll be looking around for the next closest country that holds these beliefs true, that people should have individual rights, that they should have freedom of speech. So it's in our interest to do all we can to support Israel, to make sure it is not squashed by these undemocratic and frankly anti-humanist forces. And then we apply that same lens actually to Ukraine. I know there's mixed opinion on Ukraine. Is it, you know, the leader, and is there corruption in Ukraine? Of course there is. There's corruption in every nation where there's government. Is there corruption in Russia? Of course there is. But again, looking at Ukraine, is it in our interests that a foreign entity would be able to come in and wipe out or crush Ukraine, which, with all its failings, is a democracy standing for human rights? So that's the lens I apply to Israel on the merits of everything that we believe that is important to what we call Western civilization, things that for generations people have fought and died for. Should we be defending Israel's right to exist? To me, that is an unequivocal yes.
I personally would put confidence more so in Israel based upon the fact that I've read their declaration of independence. I've read their declaration of nationhood. And then even within Ukraine, and you're looking at corruption, the question that I have is, it seems to the going all the way back to the Cold War, right? When there's this attempt to snuff, the attempt to take the oxygen out of communism that's moving out of Russia and out of China. The opposite viewpoint of that is, this is proxy warmongering. And so, do you know what I'm saying? Like yeah. There's people who on the one hand, as a conservative, I've always understood from a conservative mindset why we were involved in the Cold War, why, you know, even though it was poorly managed, why the U.S. wanted to be in Vietnam. And it's to stop the slow creep of communism. When we're talking about both Israel and Ukraine, and we're going to move away from Ukraine here because they're not exact parallels, and I understand that. If I'm understanding you correctly, it's that same thought. With Israel, we have a democratic nation that for whichever purposes they wanted, they declared themselves a state. And whether you like that or not, they are now a state, and they are a state that declares themselves an ethical democracy. And so when we're supporting those types of states, we are supporting a general Western worldview that is the rule of law and the protection of the individual. Am I correct in understanding that? And that would be the difference where people on the outside might go, no, you're just, there's a bunch of lobbyists who want to create war. You've been on the inside of that. You've been in those back rooms. Can you help give us a confident perspective on that?
Well, sure. And look, nobody's purist here. You talk about lobbyists. There are always people who have self-interest in war, wherever it may be. There's always going to be those people. And we need to accept that reality. And actually, that then underlines the need to always be thinking of freedom-related countries as being strong countries. We do need to have a military. And when the Cold War passed, if we want to believe it really did, but effectively, when the Soviet Union effectively collapsed because they could simply not sustain economically, they had a system, an economic system, which only leads to poverty, and they need money to sustain their huge military buildup over the decades. All of that was getting weaker and weaker and finally collapsed. But where the West made the mistake, and when I say the West, I mean Europe and Canada, United States, where we made the mistake was we thought, hey, it's over now. There was a very famous essay that was written right at the time, it actually went viral, if you want to call it that, called The End of History, meaning the global conflict is now over. The Soviet Union is gone. Well, no, it was a great achievement seeing the Soviet Union collapse. But where we made the mistake was then we said, I guess we don't need to continue to have, for instance, a strong military. We said that individually as nations, and we also said that, for instance, with the NATO alliance. And we are denying human nature if we think that we're going to hit, and I'm sorry, I don't want to disappoint people here, but if we think, subject to, you know, in the next life, that we're going to have always have global peace, and that we will never have actors on the world stage who actually want to aggressively take over other countries, then we're just fooling ourselves. Like when I talk to my grandkids, and they'll say, I remember a conversation with my grandson, he's young, and he says, why do we need police? Why do police have to have guns? He actually asked a question. I said, well, you know, in our town, there are some bad people. And they would break into our houses if they thought there were no police coming around. They would steal from us. They might hurt us.
I can't help but interrupt you. Just like a good liberal, your grandchild asked that question. Like, go ahead. The innocence of youth.
Exactly right. Liberalism embedded as an original sin, right?
Right, so, exactly.
So, no, but he was honestly asking that question because for a kid and, you know, seeing people, police officers walking around with guns, you know, you get into the discussion. And I said to him, unfortunately, there are always going to be people who would like to break into our home or break into our neighbor's home. And if they thought there was no police going to stop them, they'd be breaking in. And then I expanded and I said, there are people around the world in other countries who would like to break into our country and hurt us and actually and take our things. And it's sad to say there are those people. But if we have a strong army, like a strong police force, it will keep those people who want to take over our country from doing it. But once we go soft when it comes to militarily, we send the signals out again. And so we're a bit naive, the Western world, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, to think that all of the aggressive, you pick the philosophy, countries which oppose us would just go away. No, they watch for signs of weakness. And I can tell you, China is watching very closely, watching our response and the U.S. response to Israel and to Ukraine. They're watching that very carefully. They have designs and eyes on Taiwan. And if they don't think that the Western democratic world is going to support Israel, if they don't think we're going to support Ukraine, that's a signal to them. And it's very dangerous. It's a very dangerous axis that is formed there with China, with North Korea, and now Russia, part of the axis, and unfortunately, Iran. So here you've got a member state now, that being Iran, that has actually said very clearly they want to, and we need to believe this, when a terrorist regime says they want to kill you, we have to believe them. They're not just saying that. And so when they say they want to exterminate Israel, and once they get the nuclear capability, they will do that, we have to believe them, because they will. Until that time, they will finance their operations in other countries, for instance, Hezbollah in Lebanon, totally financed, nobody argues with that, by Iran. They will use these proxies, as you're talking about. That happened in earlier iterations with communism. And we have to make a decision on how we are going to, and if we're going to stand against these forces that do want to impose what I'll use the word evil, anti-human or anti-humanistic regimes on the rest of the world.
Okay, so let's kind of then narrow in a little bit, because we've talked, I think, broadly enough to kind of get some understanding on why the Western military is still abroad. And I'm thankful for that, Stockwell. You know, when everybody turned around and immediately started posting Ukraine flags, I still struggle with all of the money laundering that I am assuming is going on into that country. But to hear from you, someone who has experienced these things and thought through these policies, to hear from you that we still need to be abroad, is helpful. And of course, for Israel, that's the most obvious one for me. And the reason for that is because of the clash, of course, with the Islamic Jihad and the Islamic worldview that, as you've mentioned, is a tyrannical, barbarian worldview. And so, in fact, when you say, when a terrorist says this, we have to believe him, folks, if you haven't listened to my podcasts with a number of Islamic specialists, you need to go back and listen to them, because we're actually at stage two of jihad globally, where when they say it, it's not just that they mean it, it's that they're commanded to say it, and they're literally seeing if you're going to do anything about it. That's stage two jihad, is showing strength, and if the infidel caves, then let them live. But if they show resistance, then we make our move. So the whole Islamic world is looking at what the West is going to do with Israel. Those who are campaigning in the West, like those who have immigrated to the West, are now testing the West's resolve. And so it's really important, the work that you have done, Stockwell. And let's talk about the videos, everybody. The real purpose for this interview is to make you aware of Stockwell's YouTube channel, The Day Today Show. So that's Day with the number two, Day Show. And Stockwell, as a good Christian man, has now used his political connections to go and investigate on the ground. And the reason why I am again making that a Christian attribute is that we are dealing in the world of deception, and we Christians need to take the time to investigate truth. And so, Stockwell, when you said, Mike, I've actually traveled to Israel to get some on-the-ground footage to speak with people there, that's when I knew I wanted to interview you about this. So everybody, that's on YouTube, and it is youtube.com/@daytodayshow.com. And so far, there are three or four episodes that are up there. that Stockwell has put together on the ground in Israel. So Stockwell, talk to us about how that transpired. What happened? You know, obviously, you can probably start with October 7th, but how did it happen that you ended up on the ground and decided to go and report on this directly?
Sure. Thanks. Great question. You know, when October 7th happened, we saw immediately what's happened at other times when Israel has been attacked. And viewers need to remember, it was actually the United Nations that declared in 1947 and then 1948 by a vote that Israel would and does have the right to exist as a Jewish state. So that was the United Nations in a huge majority vote. Obviously, a number of the Arab states didn't vote for that. So there you have the situation of the creation of Israel. And they were attacked, as we know, in 1948. All the nations, the Arab nations around them, attacked them and said, we're going to exterminate you. And they failed. And then it happened again in 1967. There was this 1967 war. They all attacked and Israel prevailed again. 1973, all the nations around Israel again attacked. This time it was very close, actually, to toppling Israel. It was dangerously close, but they prevailed. Over the years, and this is what has really terrified Hamas, there has been a slow but steady progression of Islamic nations that are recognizing Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. Egypt came along first. First, they were opposed. All the work they did through the 1950s to try and exterminate Israel. But Egypt finally came to a peace accord. Jordan comes alongside a little while after that. Then even the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, recognizing Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. And then you have more recently the Abraham Accords, in which a number of Islamic nations coming on side, Saudi Arabia and others, saying, you know what, we're prepared to recognize Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. This terrified Hamas and terrified Iran as they watched their cousins, I'll use that, other Islamic entities recognizing Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. It really was one of the single largest precipitating factors for Hamas. Hamas has been in existence since 1988. We go over this in the videos. And they have two stated goals that are very clear. Number one, exterminate Israel. So when I see constantly news anchors talking as if, and unfortunately, and I feel badly, quite honestly, for all the protesters around the world who are, you know, talking about Israel has to negotiate a two-state solution. Israel has always put that on the table. They want to do that. Hamas says very clearly, number one, in their charter, no two-state solution. Israel must be eliminated, exterminated. And number two, Hamas states, kill all Jews everywhere, all the time. And then come for the rest of us. So after October 7th, it was really the lack of willingness of mainstream media to reference these key points that in meeting with some Jewish groups and then some Christian groups, it was the Jewish groups actually who pointed out and said, you know, certain elements of the Christian world has always been supportive of us, and we now see them weakening. We see them bowing to really a Hamas message that maybe we don't have the right to exist. And many Christian groups have always been supportive of us to some degree or another. And it was that conversation where I was asked, and I was, you know, said to me that you're fairly well known in Canada and somewhat in the United States in the Christian community. Would you be willing to go? You do the documentary. You're known, you're trusted by many. And my political foes don't. Well, maybe they do trust me. That's why they don't like me. But would you put together something that may be watched? It's not going to be the only thing. There's going to be other persuasive factors and voices. But would you be willing to be a part of a documentary, go there, be on the ground, and see what happened and report that to people to help to counter the lack of willingness of mainstream media to point out these basic truths? And that's why we've done it in a number of episodes. The episodes themselves aren't that long, about 15 minutes or so. But we track the history. Does Israel have the right, the aboriginal right, to exist as a Jewish state? We track that. And then who is Hamas and what is Hamas? We deal with that. We deal with it, you know, very plainly. And we deal with what happened on October 7th so that people can see it. All of this to counter the lack of willingness on mainstream media to deal with these things. For instance, Michael, when's the last time you heard someone in mainstream media say to the group, Queers for Palestine, and I'm going to tell you something that may shock your viewers, my heart goes out to those folks who identify as Queers for Palestine, because if they were in what they call Palestine right now, and they stood up in the public square declaring what they believe, they would be killed. Tortured first, probably, they would be killed. In Palestine and in most Islamic nations, there is no room, there is no tolerance, there is no love for someone who declares themselves queers and the practices that go with them. They would be exterminated. So it's but how often have you heard mainstream media say that in interviews with somebody who says, you know, I'm a queer for Palestine? I have yet to hear someone in mainstream media say, do you realize that if you said that on the streets of Gaza, they would kill you, probably torture you first? You never hear that. When you hear about the question of, you know, we do this equivalency where we look at some of the very tragic and a very recent one, the innocent people trying to bring food into the Palestinian areas, accidentally killed, but still killed, as far as we know, by Israeli missiles. The difference there is when Israel, and war is terrible and the innocent people get killed in war, Israel steps up, they take responsibility, they look at how this can be, the chances of this happening again can be lessened. But Hamas deliberately kills innocents, rapes young people. I know we don't like to talk about it, but they do, rapes children. Beheadings that went on in those kibbutzes, people being burned alive. So there is no moral equivalency when we talk about an innocent person being killed in wartime, as sometimes happened, or the deliberate focus of Hamas to do these things. So again, another thing that mainstream media does not focus on, and one of the reasons that we felt it was necessary to use a documentary to explore these issues.
Yeah, I think that that's great. Actually, that's why this show exists, because we're fed up with, as Christians, having to just accept blatantly untruthful, uncritical journalism. And so, to your point on to your points on dealing with some of those things, one of the things that you ask in your videos is Israel apartheid. And I think it would be a worthwhile conversation to explain to everybody the apartheid in South Africa and if this is an equivalency. I do just immediately on the outset want to agree with you on a few things. Number one, of course, people just are not taking in the worldview declarations in these situations. So a two-state solution is just a straw man from anybody who is looking into the situation. A two-state solution is a Western concept of trying to overcome this idea of what occupation and apartheid is, but it is not a solution for Israel because of the declarations you've just mentioned. And then, you know, you talked a little bit about these Queers for Palestine. You know, I want to just talk to that very briefly as a Christian man who would like to see homosexuality illegal in Canada. God's law forbids that behavior. Scriptures talk about the extreme danger about it. Sociologically, we can look at all of the harm that the lifestyle has. But something that people just need to understand with what Stockwell was saying is, you're not talking about a justice system. You're talking about a barbaric mob, drag you into the street, kill you system. Like, even if you are, your heart goes out to someone who is struggling with homosexuality and you're concerned for that individual, even in a Christian nation where there is the rule of law, you are not talking about any type of moral equivalency. You've used that word. It's an important phrase for people to understand. So my listeners would know that we stand at Liberty Coalition Canada. We're trying to promote God's law to our nation so that our nation has a good civil society. Even in a Christian world that might outlaw homosexuality from a public situation, you're not talking nearly about the jurisprudence, the individual protections. Like, you're not talking about any of that. There's no equivalency. These people would be dragged out into the street and, like Stockwell just say, tortured to death. And that is just barbaric and immoral. So just as we get into this now about the concept of apartheid, of course, everybody is thinking when they say words like occupation, when they say words like apartheid, they are saying, look, Arabs, Muslims have been kicked off of this land. Now their occupiers are just staying. Stockwell, help us understand that a little bit. Within the context that, of course, when Israel declared itself a nation, there historically was the movement of individuals from their homes. I think it's important that people understand just how this all fits together, but it's not a South Africa. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, correct. All through the ages, people have tried to use different approaches to demonize Israel and Israel's existence. And this apartheid was a relatively recent iteration of that. And it stemmed actually from the United Nations. They began to hold conferences called the Durham Conference, because that's where it was located, in Durham 1 and Durham 2. And they didn't ask the question. They said, Israel is apartheid. That was the subtitle of those particular conferences. And to our shame, I think the Canadian government's shame, we attended those conferences. It is such a blatant blindness in terms of even being able to approximate apartheid in Israel. And thankfully, it was when Stephen Harper was prime minister. He was asked, you know, are your officials going to speak up about this thing about Israel being apartheid at the conference? And he said, speak up. We're not even going to the conference if it's premised on something that ridiculous. Apartheid, as your viewers would know, is an awful, brutal, and a vicious system in South Africa. Clear delineation between white and black. And it was horrific. And it was our recently deceased Prime Minister Mulroney, who was one of the world leaders and taking a stand against that. And so to try and compare Israel or call Israel apartheid when, first of all, Israel has freedom of religion. And as people will see in one of those videos, you can look standing where I was looking, or actually on the shores near Tel Aviv and near an area where New Testament historians will recognize where Peter spent a little bit of time. You can look, and within your own eyesight right there, you see a mosque, you see a church, you see a synagogue. You go a little further north along the seashore, you're going to see Baha'i temples existing freely, people freely being allowed to go in and out of those places and worship. That would not happen in any, and I'll say in any Islamic state. So on the point of view of religious, it's certainly not apartheid. On the point of view of democracy, people actually, because the mainstream media won't talk about, don't recognize that in Israel, Arabs have complete freedom of democracy. Muslims have freedom of democracy. Not only can they vote, they can run for office and they can get elected, and they do get elected. And I've been in the Knesset and I've seen Muslims stand up and shout about something they don't like in the Knesset being expressed, even when our prime minister was speaking there one day and I was there, and they storm out just like they do in the House of Commons. That's Muslims. That's people who are not at all endorsing the religion of Judaism or Christianity. So they have freedom of democracy. Your viewers might be surprised to know that Muslims can and have even sit on the Supreme Court in Israel. So picture this. You can have a Muslim making a ruling over the Jewish people if that person is on the Supreme Court, and it happens. So there is no sense of parallel there calling it apartheid. And just the freedom to be able to speak out. Look at all the speaking out that's going on against Netanyahu right now in Israel, not just in their Knesset, on the streets. That would not happen in any Islamic nation. You'd be rounded up. You may be shot. You would be tortured. So democratic expression. Let's look at women's rights, fully equal in Israel. Israel's had a woman prime minister. You try and advance that notion in an Islamic nation, you will die. And just share briefly on that. I was into Afghanistan on a couple different occasions. We had people in there helping with training and policing and military and doing a number of things. And how I was heartbroken. This was just recently when we were helping to get somebody out of Afghanistan. We were actually successful. But they said to me, as I talked to the father still in Afghanistan, his daughter, who had gone to school and university while Canadian and other troops were in Afghanistan protecting their rights to do that, gone to university, graduated as a lawyer, was promoted and was made a judge. And not too long before, when I was talking to her father on the phone, she was literally at the corner store buying some groceries. Three men walked in, shot her to death, shot her in the face, phoned her father and said, "We warned you this would happen if you let your daughter go to school and have equal rights." That same type of barbaric thinking exists in the Palestinian areas today, in Gaza. It's not just Hamas. It exists largely, not 100%. All Islamic nations aren't as bad as what Hamas, Gaza and some of these other nations are. But on the area, I'm just saying that, women's rights. On the area of minority rights, you have people from all over the world that are living, voting, working citizens in Israel. Every day, Michael, people aren't aware of this, thousands of people cross the border, so-called Palestinian, into Israel every single day. Why? Because there's jobs for them there. There's very little employment freedom in Palestine. So on all these areas, on every measure of democratic and equal rights, Israel passes the test and in some cases leads the world in flying colors. And to even suggest that they would be apartheid, and again, I go back to, I'll talk about CBC, we can talk about CNN, we can talk about the BBC, for them not to push back when someone says they're apartheid, you say, "Oh, wait a minute." They should at the very least say, Israel may be a lot of things, but it's not apartheid. Again, these are the driving reasons that caused us to want to get this this documentary done and to encourage others to be done also.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. So with your experience as Minister of Public Safety, you'd be aware of the immigration policies and the Canadian-American land border. There's lots of people who drive back and forth over that land border every day with work visas and work permits and whatnot. And what you're saying is that if a Palestinian or someone who's coming from the Gaza Strip doesn't have a criminal record or known terrorist or whatnot, there's people traveling over that protected border every day to work.
They're going in there every single day. When people look at the interviews we did in the famous Hadassah Hospital, which is known around the world because it's had to be expert in mass trauma events, 5,000 people work in that hospital. About a third of them are Muslim. Quite a percentage are Christian and the rest are Jews working together. You talk about them coming across that border. I'm a bit concerned, Michael, because people from the Palestinian areas are now coming into Canada without being thoroughly vetted. I think like most Canadians, I want to see healthy immigration. I want to see immigration legal and open and healthy for Canada. But there are many people coming in right now from the Palestinian areas that have not been thoroughly vetted. And they're coming in, with views about the rest of us that are not healthy. This is a real concern. These type of things need to be carefully dealt with. But across the border into Israel from Gaza, every single day, hundreds and thousands.
And ask the basement fundamental question of the apartheid question. Those people are not racially discriminated against.
No, they are not. Not
right.
In the least.
So we, my wife and I lived in Mozambique as missionaries, and I remember arriving in South Africa, and I remember arriving in a town called Nelspruit and going, I don't get it. Like, everyone spoke so poorly of apartheid. I don't get it, until we decided to drive, you know, just a 30-minute drive away. And then we got into a totally now black district. And so we were there at the tail end where everything was over already. So there were blacks living in Nelspruit. But of course, many South African blacks had not been able to, by capitalism, yet move into where the proper town of Nelspruit. That's when I saw the atrocity of apartheid and how terrible it was. And then, of course, when you asked, why are these people living here there? The answer was because they were not allowed to immigrate into Nelspruit. This was the area that they were allowed to live. When you're talking about someone who's working and contributing to Israeli society, with your experience, you're seeing a normal immigration policy that barring criminal behavior or some other security reason, these people can apply and immigrate into the state of Israel.
Correct. That exists today. There, certain practices at the border would be similar to what we would go through when we go through international airline security, because of the fact that daily, and I'm saying daily in a very literal sense, ever since Israel's existence, there are people trying to get across Israel's border to blow up school buses full of children, to do this. So you will be checked if you're not known, you don't have your citizen, your badge from Gaza. It's going to be a little more rigorous for sure, but no, it's, you're going to be allowed access there. When you mentioned Nelspruit, it kind of that touched my heart, because when I was Minister of Finance in Alberta, the UN asked if we'd be willing to train the newly elected people, and that's in the province of Mpumalanga, as you know. They were setting up a legislature now for the first time without apartheid. Would we be willing to share with them how to basically set up a set of government books where you can run a treasury department? And you know, we did. I had the opportunity to go to Nelspruit a couple of times, met with their Minister of Finance, met with their Premier, who you would probably recognize, and it was fantastic to see them moving from apartheid. But I saw the very same things you did, Michael. The vestiges of apartheid were awful. And still, you know, this was back in the 90s, in the late 90s, still existing there. It made me realize how horrifying apartheid is, if I didn't realize it before, which I did. There is simply no comparison with Israel and the freedoms that it allows and apartheid countries. So, I think people, and not only are people coming in from Gaza in huge numbers, hundreds, if not thousands every day for work, they're coming in to access free medical care at world-famous hospitals like the Hadassah Hospital. I talked to surgeons, Michael, surgeons who work daily to save the lives of Palestinians who've come in from Gaza. One heartbreaking interview, I don't have it on the documentary, we're going to try and get it, with the mother of a Palestinian child who received life-saving treatment at the Hadassah Hospital from Jewish surgeons who did heart surgery. And she was interviewed on her way out saying, are you surprised? Are you happy that you got the, yes, I'm happy, because one day my child will be able to come into Israel and destroy Israel. Like you can't get much more open than saving the life of a would-be terrorist and allowing the mom to have that freedom of expression. You can't get more open than that. It's clearly the freedoms and the advantages that people from Gaza enjoy crossing the border are rarely, if ever, reported on.
Okay, so here's the question that everybody's waiting to ask Stockwell Day, and that's this. Why do these normal conversations between two guys like you and me seem so abstract in this world? Like, why would the left, why would... So you actually began the show off and you made a reference point, and I don't know if we've actually brought it full circle. And you made the reference point to the media not reporting on these things. We brought up leftist groups that would be killed for their views in actual Hamas territory. Why does the left partner? Like, I don't, other than just pure evil, other than the way that God defines evil, whereby people tell lies in order to say up is down and down is up, as we're warned in Isaiah 5, other than outright deception, how does the left gain? Like, I just can't imagine waking up. I'm a child. I'm born into a Canadian leftist family. You know, my mom and dad are both broadcasters for the CBC. They get their marching orders directly from the prime minister's office. We've been lefty. We walk around with lefty flags everywhere. I still can't get my head around why the left partners with terrorist groups that would kill the left. Like, I still can't see that as a strategy. I don't get it.
Well, the left, broadly speaking, and, you know, people say, are you right-wing or left-wing? I guess, you know, when I was Minister of Social Services in Alberta, we increased the amount of money that goes to people truly in need. And someone will say to me, oh, that's really leftists. And I go, I don't know if that's leftist. It's common sense. We need to take care of people in need. So the terminology, more broadly speaking, the left... And in today, what we face really is it's a form of what we call cultural Marxism. Because if you go back to the late 1800s, Marx and other Karl Marx and others, not Groucho Marx, and others, Lenin, not John Lennon, they had a particular view which prevails today right into academe and in the media. And that is, if there's any inequality anywhere, it's because the person who is more successful is evil and therefore must be destroyed or taken down. If there's any difference in success rates, it has to be because the one who's more successful is evil. So cultural Marxism said that. Marxism said we have to destroy the quote oppressors. So Israel in its early stages, and let's face it, Israel was founded in those original years. I'm talking about early 1900s and moving into the kibbutz movement. It was actually significantly very left-leaning, other than one thing. They allowed freedom of expression, even among, because the Jewish people as an entity allow that. But that began, and so the world kind of was okay, other than those Islamic nations, with Israel, because you know what? They were poor. They were this poor little state, United Nations votes, okay, you can call yourself it. They were poor. But you know what? The war of 1967 changed all that. All of a sudden, Israel was no longer seen as the wimps. Those nations surrounding them, including Egypt, tried to destroy them. They were not successful. Now, Israel was successful. So with a culturally Marxist view, if Israel's successful, you know what? They must be evil. They must be doing something wrong. They must be destroyed. So that applies not just to Israel. That applies across the board. And that's why the left, in their terminology, will not... First of all, the extreme left says, if you don't agree with me, I will kill you. That's the extreme left. And that's actually Marxism was based on that. Tens of thousands, millions of people dying in the Soviet Union. But now carry that without the same level of lethal intent. Academe today is controlled. The thought is cultural Marxism. Again, if you're successful, you must be evil. We have to destroy you. So university professors are not out there saying, kill successful people. But they are saying there's something wrong. They must be taken down. And that bleeds into media. And media says, basically, mainstream media, if you don't agree with our cultural worldview, okay, we're not going to kill you, but we will destroy you. We will marginalize you. We will make you look like an idiot. We will take you down. That is a prevailing sense. Mainstream media will not allow, like you said, you and I are sitting here, we can have some disagreement, but we're not killing each other. I was just a few years ago, I had the honor of being asked to go to Tibet to meet with, it was by the Dalai Lama and his cabinet in exile. 50 people were chosen from around the world. I don't know how I made the list, but to spend 3 days with his cabinet and advise them on matters related to what China wants to do with Tibet, because as you know, it's a very bad situation. And so picture this, Michael. Here I am, I'm sitting on a platform. We were doing the summation at the end of 3 good days of discussion with Dalai Lama, his cabinet, a room full of his monks. And on the stage, I'm sitting beside the Dalai Lama, and I said, you know, we're talking about differences of opinion. I said, you know, I believe that Jesus is Lord of the universe. The Dalai Lama does not believe that. Matter of fact, one time when I met him before and we spent some time together, he gave me a book which said basically Jesus wasn't. And we could sit there on the stage with that difference of opinion and not kill each other and work together on a project that would benefit the world, being how do we handle Tibet's situation? So here you have the Dalai Lama can handle that difference of opinion on something as really dramatic as who controls the universe. But the media in Canada, United States, mainstream media does not want to let people know that you can have sincere and serious disagreements and still not destroy each other or kill each other. And the whole movement that comes from much of, not entirely, much of the Islamist movement does not allow that freedom of discussion, or in fact, you could be killed. So those are the key differences there when we're talking about, for instance, Israel and all the nations that surround it.
I really appreciate that nuance that you brought, that it was the 1967 war that changed the perspective. It's disheartening, again, to be going back to the random categories of Karl Marx and the oppressor and the oppressed critical theory that is so popular within the Western world now. I think for my listeners, I really want you to hear how, as Stockwell explained the reason why there's this suppression of information, is because of this fundamental acceptance of an oppressor oppressed category. And again, I want you as listeners to understand how ridiculous that gets when we're talking about the things that we've been talking about. First of all, it's always the oppressor oppressed categories are always random, based upon public sentiment or popular sentiment. Second of all, if you'll notice that it is very often just a situation that would, even if it was lived out in real time, even if these principles were true, you would move from oppressor oppressed right to oppressor oppressed. There's no solution. It's just an ongoing recreation. And actually, Stockwell, that's what you showed right there. For a moment, Israel was viewed as the oppressed. And then there became a moment in time where simply because of organization and the rule of law and the organization of a military, they're now viewed as the oppressor. There's no change in the Israeli Declaration of Independence and their clear call for peace in the area. It was a moment in time. And so again, whenever we're talking about this cultural Marxism or this critical theory, you have to remember that the end, it never ends. What, you know, if you side with the oppressed one moment and you don't care about the rule of law, you just care about outcomes, the moment that person it gets the outcomes you want, you have to then find another group to latch yourself to in order to overthrow the power. And so all it does is create divide and conflict. And it goes back to the original question that we started the podcast with. Is the world getting safer under this cultural Marxist movement, or is the world getting more dangerous? And as Christians, we need to be able to wade through, understand these philosophical, these theoretical concepts that are driving these movements in order for us not to be caught up in them. And it's so important that people like Stockwell go on the ground into Israel, do a documentary in order to help us understand what's been going on. We're talking about an experienced Christian who has the ability to get some inside information and portray that to you in a truthful manner. Again, this is why the Christian worldview is so powerful for promoting liberty. Even though we can have freedom of religion, it is actually freedom of religion only exists underneath a Christian worldview, which can allow people to explore or reject truth. And so, Stockwell, I'm very thankful that you've gone to explore truth. And again, I want to bring up the website, everybody. It's on YouTube. And this is the Day to Day Show. And you can go there, Day2Day Show. And these are some very important interviews and work that you've done. Stockwell, thank you so much for your time. Did you have any closing thoughts for our listeners?
Well, just to if you're going on YouTube, use the at Day to Day Show. I'm not saying YouTube's trying to oppose us. They did put up, as I said, a indicator that you have to be 18 to watch that, to watch the YouTubes about freedom in Israel. I don't know what that's all about, but maybe that'll get more young people to watch it, because anything that's restricted, right, has a certain allure to it. I would just close out by first thanking you for this. And going back to how you started the show, and I think what drives much of your ministry is that people need to speak up. You don't have to be nasty and arrogant, but to speak up strongly about the key points in your life and in the life of your family and our country. We have to speak up on those things. People live in abject fear these days of being canceled. I know what that's about. It's not fun. But folks, silence is not an option. Lovingly expressing the truth is the road we need to be walking on.
Actually, you just opened another can of worms that I want to explore for two more minutes if we can. So here's how it's going to go. And it goes to this question about being canceled and you saying it's not fun when you're attacked. So folks, off camera, as we were going, I was trying to find the YouTube channel that Stockwell was talking about. And literally, I opened it up, I typed in Stockwell Day, Day to Day, and more Rick Mercer clips came up than Stockwell's channel. And of course, I know that if you click on that, it's either Stockwell having fun with Rick Mercer or just Rick Mercer having fun at Stockwell's expense. And so Stockwell, can you talk about that? Because I know you're on the far side of this. I know you personally now. It's been great to get to know you. I don't see you as a man who would be crumpled by all of that attack. It's not fun, but what is it actually like being at the tail end of just people smearing you publicly? Like, what is it? Are you able to chuckle at it? How do you react now? Because I think so many Christians are paralyzed by fear, but guys like you that I know, it's almost like Mercer.
Well, yeah, great question. Someone said, I guess after a while in politics, you just develop a thicker skin. No, you don't. It always hurts when people say things about you that aren't true. You know, you spend a lifetime or years in politics, you're going to do things that you shouldn't have done anyway. So you're going to get, rightly so, you're going to get corrected. Those aren't the things I'm talking about. It's the constant, and it's going to sound, you know, like I'm beating a drum here. It's consistently against people who are on the small c conservative side of the spectrum. And you see it on the main anchor of the news. You see it in our the so-called comedy shows that are on TV distinctly. You know, if you watch Saturday Night Live, if you watch Jon Stewart, oh, they'll poke gently at some of the leaders who are liberal, but they will savage those who are not. And humor is a very effective tool to take someone down. So what do you do? I can tell you, you never get, here's a real life thing. You're about to walk onto an airplane and in a Toronto airport, you happen to glance over at the Globe and Mail. There's a headline about you having apparently said something, and you look at it and you go, that is so outrageous. I never said anything close to that. And then you think to yourself, no one's going to believe that. Then you step onto the airplane. And as you're walking down the row of the airplane, you see people reading their newspaper and they're reading that headline and they look up and they see it's you and they quickly look down almost. And then you realize, oh my goodness, people are going to believe that. And you want to take the microphone from the flight attendant and say, hey, you people reading that headline, that's not true. But you know what? You can't say it. And now, when you have opportunity, yeah, you try and defend. So for those of us, and actually, if you're speaking the truth in any walk of life, not political, you're going to hit a point at which you're going to be maligned. It's a guarantee. It's actually a guarantee in the Bible. You will be maligned. And what do we do at those times? Well, if we want to not collapse, and if we want to not stand back in fear, then, you know, pray for those who say all manner of evil against you falsely. And correct the record when you can, and bless those, because somebody who will deliberately lie about somebody else, you know what? They need prayer. So if that scripture is there to activate us when somebody lies about us, then maybe that's what we should be doing. So speak the truth, speak it in love. And when you get falsely accused, remember, that's actually part of the promises that go to those who pursue truth.
And I will close then with scripture coming from Matthew 5:11. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of things against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So Stockwell, we thank you for your thoughts and your investigation. Everybody, one last time, you want to go over to YouTube and you want to go YouTube/@daytoday show in order to get the link directly to Stockwell's episodes. Really, folks, I would encourage you to share this podcast around, but also to share those links on Stockwell's Day-to-Day Show on social media and really help people investigate all of the lies that are going on around the state of Israel right now. Stockwell, thank you for your time, and everybody, God bless you and Godspeed.